Hi, it's Dr. Risa E. Lewis, dropping in to tell you about a book that Dr. Adara Landry and I wrote. It's called Microskills, Small Actions, Big Impact. It's a business self-help book coming in 2024 by HarperCollins. Pre-order now, Microskills, Small Actions, Big Impact, wherever you buy your books.
Medication adherence is one of those things that has been proven to be something that peer-to-peer healthcare can help with. It's also proven that people who connect with each other for practical tips, tips about living with a certain physical challenge or symptom, that a doctor who doesn't have that same condition or disease can't really help with, that this makes living possible with a disease. If people are able to connect, there's this deep well of information that exists in patient groups that's currently invisible to mainstream healthcare that we have the opportunity to tap into.
This is the Visible Voices podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Risa Lewis. In today's episode, I speak with Susanna Fox. Now, to be clear, Susanna does refer to herself as Susanna R. Fox. So one of the many reasons why I knew I needed to speak with her is she is Susanna R. Fox, and I am Risa E. Lewis. So let me read you a little bit of Susanna's bio. Quote, I help people navigate health and technology. One focus for both my advisory work and research is the power of connection among patients, survivors, and caregivers. My book, Rebel Health, A Field Guide to the Patient-Led Revolution in Medical Care, is published this February 2024 by MIT Press. And that audience is the focus of our conversation. Let's get to it. You wrote this book in memory of Tom Ferguson, MD, who urged you to spend time in the online patient communities starting in 2001.
Yeah, Tom was someone who we were so lucky at the Pew Research Center to be given a research grant as former journalists to become researchers and look at the social impact of the internet. And when we released our very first report, the Online Healthcare Revolution, the very first report about healthcare, my boss and mentor, Lee Rainey, who's the director of the Pew Internet Project, was on a national radio show. And the other guest was Tom Ferguson. And after they finished out that interview, Lee hung up the phone, picked it back up, called Tom Ferguson in Austin, Texas, and asked him to be an advisor to us. And that decision changed my life because Tom was not only a mentor, but a teacher. He was someone who was trained at Yale as a doctor and immediately set off to change the world so that everybody understood the importance of patients, survivors, and caregivers contributing to their own health. He was so different from the other people that I'd met at this early stage of healthcare and technology. It was like a one-on-one graduate course in the beginning of digital health.
So it sounds like he was a visionary. And I'm going to argue that you too are a visionary in the way you combined, as you just shared, journalism, technology, and the peer-to-peer healthcare community.
It's an awkward question to be asked if you're a visionary. And I will say that if I am taking on that role, it's in service to the communities where I have spent time. If other people had the privilege that I've had to spend so much time talking with patients, survivors, and caregivers who are transforming healthcare for the better, they also would not be able to resist the pull to share those stories. And if that's visionary, great.
I'm going to add on storyteller because this amazing read is a storytelling journey. And lest the listeners who are healthcare professionals are thinking, wait a minute, patients aren't leading healthcare, we're leading healthcare. Well, settle down. We're going to get into it and we're going to explain. So I read, My goal in writing this book has been to help you, reader, see what I see. The wide horizon and abundant opportunities presented by an underground revolution in health and healthcare. At the end of the book, you shared the following confession. The first time I faced a health crisis in my family, I failed. I'd been tracking the patient-led revolution for a few years, gathering evidence of how useful it is for patients, survivors, and caregivers to seek answers, pool resources, and solve problems together. But I didn't think this is just like doctors. I did not think that I needed to tap into that vein of wisdom and innovation for myself. My goal in writing this book has been to help you see what I see, the wide horizon and abundant opportunities presented by an underground revolution in health and healthcare. What are you speaking about when you talk about this revolution?
There are people who are connecting because they're not getting what they need from mainstream healthcare. There are people who are realizing that they can't get a diagnosis. They're not describing their symptoms in a way that doctors can hear them, or they know that they need to learn in community, or they have an idea for how to solve a problem. And outside the view of the mainstream healthcare system, people are connecting online and offline to solve these problems together. And because it's been underground, it's not yet something that the federal government knows about and is tapping into. It's not something that most healthcare systems are tapping into, but it's time. It's time for everyone to get in on this incredible, powerful megatrend.
So I'm going to ask then a rhetorical question. So do you think people are aware of all these communities?
Yes, people are aware in the sense that it's part of the zeitgeist to be part of.
Did you use the word zeitgeist?
I did.
That's a great word.
So it's part of the zeitgeist to be part of a Facebook group, for example. And often when I'm talking about peer-to-peer healthcare and the patient-led revolution, people say, oh, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about things like AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. You're talking about Facebook groups. And I say, yes, and it's not only the wonderful, well-established groups or the new groups that are popping up online. It's a trend that has been going on in some ways for centuries, this undeniable instinct that we all have to connect with someone like us in order to solve a problem, to seek community, that is sped up and has gone wide because of the internet.
There's so many aspects to the book and to the stories you share that I like. And part of it relates to the visible voices. You are making the invisible visible, those not being seen and heard, more seen, more heard. And in the book, you talk about seekers, networkers, solvers, which I kind of consider like the DIY MacGyvers, and the champions. Can you give some working definitions to the listeners that haven't read the book yet?
Sure. And I should say, when I started writing the book, I only had three of these in mind. Champions evolved as I was writing. Seekers are people who go on the hunt for information. They're not getting the answers they need, and some spark turns them on and they realize they can go out and seek better information. Networkers are people who naturally learn in community. When they have a question or they've found something that works for them, they share it. They go to a group and share it. And they're also very good at pooling resources. Solvers are people who see something that's not working and they can't help but attack the problem. And that goes for the hardware of healthcare, like an assistive device or a medical device that's not working the way they think it should be. It could also be something systemic or even a clinical trial. Champions are people who have access to mainstream resources, like funding, like regulatory guidance, like access to special materials or labs or manufacturing facilities. And they see a patient-led group that needs those resources, and they get them the resources so the patient-led group can scale their idea.
Yeah. And to be clear for listeners, these aren't just patients participating in these groups. When you and I had a pre-meet chat, I have quite a few physician friends that are involved in these online groups because they haven't gotten answers in their own practice or when speaking with colleagues in medicine. And the examples I'll give are a friend who has a family member with Ehlers-Danlos, a friend with a child who during COVID developed an eating disorder and was scared to death and couldn't get answers, and also the treatment approach and psychological understanding of eating disorders has evolved from when we were in med school 20, 30 years ago. And finally, this is not a friend, but I heard recently about someone that was involved with a dating site for people living with herpes, genital herpes.
What you are describing is this very real phenomenon that science and medicine does not have all the answers. And the sooner we admit that and admit that there is value in peer-to-peer healthcare, in the connections that people can make, and that patients and survivors and caregivers know themselves and know their bodies better than anyone. And it's our opportunity to tap into that and to understand it and to encourage people to safely share information. And that's key, that what we're talking about here is a phenomenon that is pro-science and pro-social.
There are many reasons why you and I have Venn diagram overlap of interests and life events. And one I'll bring up now is devices. So within emergency medicine, I'm an emergency medicine physician, and how I journeyed professionally is the use of ultrasound at the bedside. And I have been involved in many studies, many papers, and many meetings with developers, you know, be it the hardware companies or the software companies with ultrasound devices. And I've seen them over time go from big, bulky, and really hard to move to now, you know, put in your pocket and really just portable in a way that we would have never imagined, including actually the storage of information from printing out thermal paper images of ultrasound to now it goes to a cloud. And a lot of what you use as examples, as stories, is device related and diabetes related. And I think there's a reason why, and I'm wondering you can go deeper into those two, devices and diabetes. Dynamically, I just want to use a few D's right there. Go ahead.
The Diabetes Rebel Alliance is an example of the full stack of what I'm talking about. They embody all four archetypes in order to get what they need as a community. So historically, medical device companies only saw clinicians as their customer base. And when the continuous glucose monitors and insulin pumps came out, patients and caregivers, people living with diabetes, were grateful for these advances. And they started to realize that they did not have access to the data that was being generated by their own bodies or by their children's bodies in the case of kids with insulin requiring or type 1 diabetes. And so the continuous glucose monitor is, just to quickly review, a lot of people in your audience will know this, but there's a subcutaneous monitor that shows a minute-by-minute readout of how someone's blood sugar is doing. And so parents, for example, will set alarms throughout the night. Every 2 hours, one parent will get up and walk down the hallway and literally look at the screen for their child's continuous glucose monitor. And it was reassuring to know where their numbers were going, but still having to get up as if your child is a newborn, even though they're 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, that's not workable. And so a group of parents started talking about how do we free the data. One guy, John Kostick, who was an engineer, decided to try and hack into his son's CGM. He was able to free the data and send it to his Apple Watch. the key here is that he shared that on Twitter. So he's an example of a solver and a networker. That set off a revolution of innovation in diabetes, where it was a do-it-yourself, open source movement that resulted in a rig that is essentially a DIY open source artificial pancreas, because they were able to hook up an insulin pump with CGM technology. And that was done by Dana Lewis and Scott Librand with the help of Ben West. These are three patient advocates who were able to hack this DIY device together. And that pushed the FDA and that pushed the industry to start thinking about patients. Another key element here is that there were patient advocates who were very skilled in understanding how Washington works. Anna McAllister is an entrepreneur who lives with diabetes, and she led the charge towards saying the software updates have to be faster and we need access to our data officially, not this underground DIY stuff. We need official access. And that's why I love it, because there were seekers looking for answers. There were solvers who figured out how to do it themselves. There were networkers who shared it online. And then there were champions who worked at the device companies, worked at FDA, worked at the American Diabetes Association, who said, okay, let's listen to patients.
I'm Dr. Risa E. Lewis, dropping in to tell you about a book that Dr. Adair Landry and I wrote. It's called Microskills: Small Actions, Big Impact. It's a business self-help book being published in April of 2024 by HarperCollins. We believe every future goal, complicated task, and healthy habit can be broken down into simple, measurable, and tiny skills that you can practice and then excel by removing obstacles, overcoming assumptions, and maximizing your potential at work and in life. You can pre-order it now. Go to bookshop.org, amazon.com, or wherever you buy your books. Many books are fun when there are visuals, when there are graphs, and Rebel Health does not disappoint. So throughout the book, you have specifically a repetitive visual of the Rebel Health matrix, and I'll describe it to listeners. On the x-axis, going left to right, we have needs not met on the left, one side. At the other side, we have needs met. And then there's a line perpendicular, the y-axis, that goes top to bottom, that crosses through that x-axis. And at the top of that y-axis line is visible, and at the bottom is invisible. So I'm wondering if it's possible to describe these quadrants and maybe an example of someone or something or a disease process we'd find in each quadrant.
Sure.
Or you can walk us through sort of the circle.
Great.
You can go, you know, clockwise, counterclockwise. We have righties, we have lefties, we have all kinds of things.
So the lower left quadrant, the one where people's needs are not met and they are invisible to mainstream healthcare, that's where I've spent most of my time, because those are people who are living with rare or life-changing diagnoses. For example, a rare genetic disorder. One group that I talk about in the book is the Mobius syndrome community, which presents with full facial paralysis, very rare condition. So as an example of how people move to the next quadrant over, which is the lower right quadrant, that's where your needs are being met, but you're still not visible to the mainstream healthcare system. That might be a situation like I described in the diabetes hacker community, where a solver solves a problem, and just people who are on Twitter or part of a Facebook group know about it, or in a certain region of the country, but it's still not visible to the mainstream healthcare system. Now, there's also a way that you move from the lower left quadrant to the upper left quadrant, where your needs are not being met, but you are at least visible to mainstream healthcare. And that's when you tap into the power of the networkers in your community. Networkers can get loud on social media. They can get the attention from journalists. They can get the attention. They can go to a conference and ask a question and make some noise. And so mainstream healthcare all of a sudden says, wow, there is a big group of people whose needs are not being met. Let's pay attention to this. Nirvana is the upper right quadrant where your needs are being met and you are visible to the mainstream healthcare system. That's where everybody wants to get to. And this book is a how-to guide of leveraging the people in your community and leveraging your own skills, stepping into your power to try to get what you need from the healthcare system.
Amazing walkthrough. Is there an example that comes to mind of the needs not met yet visible quadrant?
Yes. I'll point to the diabetes community as one where their needs were not met, and yet thanks to press coverage of the work, for example, that an activist named Amy Tenderick was doing, people started to talk about diabetes and the needs, the data access needs in a different way. Another one that I'll point to, you know, one that actually is kind of cresting, it seems, in the media these days, is the challenge of perimenopause. That for many, many years, people didn't talk about menopause and perimenopause. And so it was invisible. It was down in that lower left quadrant. And thanks to a lot of people making noise on social media and in the mainstream press, people talking about it, people writing about it, people are starting to talk about perimenopause in a way where not everybody's needs are being met yet. Not everybody really knows what treatments or has access to the treatments that are going to help them. But at least it's visible. At least people are talking about it now.
It's a great example. Great, great example. Okay. Susanna, voice and visibility. When did you realize you had a voice? And when did you start using your voice?
I think that it was the responsibility that I started feeling after spending so much time interviewing patients and interviewing caregivers, that I felt that I was a keeper of stories. And I felt this responsibility to use my voice to speak up, to start getting on bigger stages and getting into higher level conversations in healthcare in order to represent those people who trusted me with their stories.
Is there anything keeping you up at night these days?
Perimenopause. What's keeping me up at night is the sense that there are so many people who are suffering and who feel alone, who don't yet know that there are people out there who would love to help them if only they knew how to find them.
You are in rooms often with doctors. And a friend said to me once, she's not a doctor. However, she was often in boardrooms and other meetings with doctors. And she said to me, you know, Risa, doctors always think, this is a bit of a paraphrase, doctors always think they're the smartest people in the room. And you know what? There are plenty of smart people. They're not always the smartest people in the room. And so I'm wondering, as a means of feedback and education, you know, what's been your experience and what would be a way to sort of have listeners who are a bit skeptical of these online platforms and groups, et cetera, to be a little bit more open to the power and actually the health that this brings to people?
Something that's reassuring to clinicians is when people are able to cite evidence. And the good news is that we actually have about 40 years worth of evidence. Looking at the medical literature, there have been studies that show the power of peer-to-peer healthcare. The evidence base is strongest in mental health and recovery from eating disorder, from substance use disorder. But the evidence is growing that expert patients who connect with each other and share what they know, especially to people who are newly diagnosed, are able to raise everyone's game. And so part of what my project was to try to bring forward a lot of the evidence that exists in all these disparate areas, and also to show the power of patients connecting with each other for real life cost-saving examples like medication adherence, Medication adherence is one of those things that has been proven to be something that peer-to-peer healthcare can help with. It's also proven that people who connect with each other for practical tips, tips about living with a certain physical challenge or symptom, that a doctor who doesn't have that same condition or disease can't really help with, that this makes living possible with a disease if people are able to connect. There's this deep well of information that exists in patient groups that's currently invisible to mainstream healthcare that we have the opportunity to tap into.
Your legacy.
I hope that my legacy is for people to not feel alone in their illness and in their suffering. I hope that my legacy is to shine a light on the path forward to equitable healthcare, that everyone has access to information, data, and tools they need to make decisions. And most importantly, that people have access to each other.
The Risa wrap-up. Special thanks to Susanna Fox for joining me in conversation. Three take-home points for you, audience. Number one, the patient-led health movement. It's real, it's thriving, it's online, it's been underground, but no longer. Number two, are you feeling invisible? Are you feeling like maybe not invisible, but you're not getting enough attention vis-a-vis your healthcare needs, or your healthcare diagnoses, or your healthcare symptoms? Seek out online networks. Seek peer-to-peer coaching, peer-to-peer education, peer-to-peer help and support. Finally, if you look at the six pillars of lifestyle medicine, community is one of those pillars. And Susanna really, really taps into values, celebrates the importance, the life-giving, the healthy aspect of being in community. So be in community, audience. That's all I have for you this week. See you next time. The Visible Voices podcast amplifies voices both known and unknown, discussing topics of healthcare, equity, and current trends. We are a production of the People's Media Network. Our team includes Dr. Giuliano DePortu and me, Dr. Risa E. Lewis. Please find me on social media at Risa E. Lewis and through the website, thevisiblevoicespodcast.com. If you like the podcast, please rate and review us. Share the podcast with a friend today. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, to be continued.
Do you know there's research that women that attend women conferences are more likely to have a promotion or a raise in the next year? Imagine if you could also attend a retreat in California and enjoy some sunshine and beach time. That's what we've put together for you April 5th through 7th in Huntington Beach, California. Visit peoplealwayshcc.com/revitalize-retreat to learn more.